I'm Mike and Scott, and this piece is part of the Pulse's special episode, Science and the 4th of July. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. When the Founding Fathers wrote about the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence, they were concerned with the purpose of good government, which should protect its citizens' life, liberty, and their ability to thrive. But today, we're chasing a different kind of happiness, one in our daily lives, and a gigantic research field has sprung up around this, Shuka Kalantari reports.
We can learn to be happy. It's a skill we develop with time, kind of like mastering yoga or chess. That's the takeaway from people who study happiness. One of their suggestions? Keep a gratitude journal. I'm a pretty happy person, but I'm a mom with a very active toddler. And I work. I get stressed out sometimes. There definitely are unhappy moments. So I tried it out for a week. I wrote a daily list of things I'm thankful for. Like the sound of my kid throwing pebbles into the marina by our house. I'm also grateful for my toddler's love of music. He likes to sing me his version of the Sesame Street classic, Elmo's Song.
Dad, Mama, Dad, Baba, Dad.
The people I love make me happier. That was the common thread in my journaling. Decades of research echo this. Strong social relationships are a key to happiness, and that's good for our health.
Feeling good about life and feeling like you have purpose and meaning and happiness adds years to your life expectancy.
Dacher Keltner teaches psychology at UC Berkeley, and he's a leading researcher in this field. He says these happy feelings are good for our bodies.
They affect your nervous system. They affect levels of cortisol. They lower it, the stress hormone. They influence the vagus nerve, which I study in my lab, which is a big bundle of nerves in your body that calms your body down and helps you connect to others.
Dacher is a positive psychologist. He studies emotions like happiness and awe and empathy and how they affect our health. The findings of his studies and others are implemented in schools around the country. Preschools have meditation circles alongside their reading circles. High school students go on mindful nature hikes to combat depression. Dacher says we'll be seeing these practices in the healthcare field next.
A lot of the data show that doctors and nurses are really burned out and they are fried, that patients are enormously stressed. And so they're starting to think about, and you see this in hospital settings, like how do you beautify hospital settings to take advantage of the benefits of nature? Can you have a little room where people can go and meditate or do yoga?
And it's not just healthcare. Silicon Valley tech companies are now hiring happiness consultants. HR managers are often called chief happiness officers. UC Berkeley neuroscientist Emiliana Simon-Thomas says keeping employees happy is good for a company's bottom line.
There are lots of costs associated with turnover and stress-related illnesses. And I think the idea that happy workers is something that matters to an organization is a growing one.
But not everybody is so eager to jump on this train. John Grohol offers up some shade to throw on this ray of happiness. He's a psychologist and the founder of the mental health website, psychcentral.org.
The core happiness levels, the core optimism levels that we experience in life, those are genetically predetermined that you can't change those.
New research suggests that about half of your baseline happiness, perhaps what you'd call your general outlook on life, is inherited. Plus, he says a lot of these studies are done in labs, with college students required to participate in experiments for class credit. They're never duplicated on more diverse groups.
And this is a problem for a number of reasons. A university college student in America really does not represent the humanness of all people everywhere, and certainly not all age groups.
Another issue happiness scientists have grappled with is what happiness really means. Today, most psychologists agree happiness is not defined as perpetual pleasure, not even in children's movies. Here's Dacher Keltner again.
I was involved in the film Inside Out, where I was a scientific consultant for that.
The movie's about emotions, like joy and sadness and anger, personified inside the mind of an 11-year-old girl named Riley. In one scene, Sadness, played by Phyllis Smith, is consoling Riley's imaginary friend because Riley is growing out of her need to play with him.
We were best friends.
Yeah, it's sad.
And it really was about, hey, life gets really sad. Right? And that's okay. In fact, sadness is beautiful, and sadness has wisdom, and sadness moves you forward into personal growth.
When I journaled about things I'm grateful for, it wasn't all happy things. I also wrote about getting to spend 20 minutes with a friend a few weeks before an illness took his life. It's a happy memory intertwined with a very sad one. There's still lots of questions about happiness science, but some of it seems intuitively right. Like that building good relationships and reflecting on what we're grateful for makes us happier people. It may or may not add years to my life, but writing about skipping pebbles on the beach with my toddler definitely makes me feel happy.
Rocks.
And that's something.
Get some rocks, Now let's throw them in the water, ready?
One, two, three.
Good job, Sina.